This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side. And, you know, Thursday's 9 o'clock hour. We bring in our fellas, our brothers from the MGO Blog atmosphere, MGO Blog Roundtable with us. And the postmortem continues from Michigan's 37-33 loss. And I know you guys pore over the film. And I wonder if you have the same. If you had the same feeling I did, a reaction I did every time I watched the tape, I ask two questions. How did they lose this game? And I said, man, aren't they going to win this game? And then obviously the outcome always comes out the same. But I just, you watch it, it's like, man, they let this one slip away, 37-33. Of course, we talked to Brian Cook, BC. How are you this morning?
Looking forward to basketball season.
Seth Fisher, how are you?
It is not quiet. I wanted quiet, and it is not quiet, Sam. But I did want to shout out The Miz. I'm wearing my DCFC shirt for The Miz today because I know he's a big fan. And he is the only person who decided to tell us all that Cade was in the tent when McCarthy just fumbled. Well, it wasn't really on McCarthy, but yeah. Only person. Thank you, Miz.
Yeah, which is just par for the terrible broadcast course. For the Fox folks, which they can't mess with me anymore. See, Fox, every time I do a breakdown, I'm getting this thing from Fox. You can't use their footage no more. Can't mess with me anymore. Using only coaches' footage from this point on, so Fox can leave me the hell alone. How are you doing, Craig Ross?
I'm doing fine. Boy, I'd sure like to get the coaches' footage. I don't know if Seth would like to get it or not, but because it just means more work for him. But yeah, it's been a frustrating week. And I've watched the film three times now through the game, twice in slow motion, and I kept having the same feeling, Sam. How in the world did we lose this? It was the same thing. So
well, they're all saying right now, and everyone's reminding me because I was wrong in UFR. That it wasn't a pick play at the end. That fourth down was not a pick play, that they were running slants. Was it, though? I mean, have you ever heard a coach, like, admit that he called a pick play?
Yeah, it wasn't a pick play. Yeah,
no, it's a rub route. That's what they'll say. It's a rub route, which is legal, and a pick play is illegal.
I don't know.
I can't tell the difference.
It was legal. Yeah. Samer still is running behind the line of scrimmage. You block that guy if you wanted to. But
no, they just came up. They ran the same. They ran the same sort of deal that they ran on the other fourth down. Difference was the coverage. They played off coverage on the fourth down earlier, and they pressed him. They pressed the slot on that second fourth down. He went. I think. He said, I'm going to the well again on that slant. But he obviously, in retrospect, he should have gone to the flat.
You can't say that because, the ball's in the air and Michigan's wide receiver gets knocked off his route. Like, that's a flag every time, right?
It should be a flag. So that notwithstanding, it should be a flag. He got interfered with twice on that play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But because of the coverage, they were saying, look, that in order to go to that guy, he has to clear. This is a right now throw. You have to see him clear in order to go to that route. Otherwise, the outside slant or the guy in the flat. They pressed him because they were not going to let him beat them to the inside like St. Ristel did a couple of plays before. mm-hmm. on the fourth down. It's just a different coverage. And I just think it was predetermined. That's my opinion. I can't say that for sure.
That's fine. But like, if that's our biggest complaint about Cade, or like he missed the fade to Sanders still, which that's a hard throw to make. Like, I think that those are. Let's take this away. Cade McNamara had a game. Cade McNamara had the kind of game that could beat a lot of really good teams. Like, State was scoring a lot more than I think we thought they were capable of doing. I think that it was just that he kept us in the game just as much. Like, all the things that went wrong, we can all pick our own things, right? The Moten, not interception, whatever. We can all pick our things. But, like, you got to pick a lot of Cade McNamara moments that were like, well, that could have gone wrong, too.
Yeah, he threw for 380 yards. You got to win that game. I'm not one that's saying that they lost. I'm not there. I'm not even that focused on the fourth down play.
Yeah, no. I mean, Cade threw for 380 yards and he had three drops, and one of which, the Corum drop, was probably, I'm going to guess, a 50 or 60 yard play at least. So, and you know, he, you, this game. Cade was phenomenal, truly, in my opinion. I mean, the plays that you're talking about, those last two were sort of defining of the game to me. There's a third and three, State's coming down into the box, and on the right side of the formation, Andrell Anthony's going to beat his guy, so the back just tackles him, grabs onto him, throws him into the ground. And so Cade does the right thing. He sees Sanders still is open, but he overthrows him by 2 yards, you know, in a game. Then, and that's the winning play of the game, probably, if he makes that throw. But he's made the throws the whole game. He doesn't make that one. And then on the next play, on the play you're talking about, I think Cade sees that Cornelius Johnson has been held and then interfered with. So he throws it at him. He figures he's going to get the flag, doesn't. But meanwhile, Sanristil, known as within 20 yards of him on a throw I could make to the left, he gets the ball out to the left to Sanristil. It's probably a touchdown, and they win the game again. And to me, this is defining. Those two plays were as defining as anything, at least from an offensive perspective, as what went on on the field.
Ryan Cook.
What's the question?
Yeah, your broad stroke of that game and that loss to Michigan State.
Well, someone should tell the defensive coordinator that the spotting rules are different in college than they are in the NFL. Like, three illegal substitution penalties, many more snaps. Yeah. Michigan's not even set, trying to substitute when the opposition isn't substituting. Like, it's hard not to draw a direct line from the fact that we have a 34-year-old defensive coordinator who's got mostly NFL experience and a loss. Because how much of that was Michigan having Chris Jenkins on the field on his own stretch, where he goes upfield of his guy and there's no one in the gap, and then that's a 60-yard touchdown run? Like, the amount of substitution Michigan's been doing on the defensive line is unusual. And I think in the NFL, everybody in the NFL is a fairly decent player. Everybody in the NFL knows that when there's a zone stretch, you need to not go upfield to your guy. And when you're talking about, you know, Chris Jenkins, a guy who I thought was going to be viable probably next year, or, you know, Welshoff or Spate, like, these guys are, there's a big gap between them and the starters, and the amount of rotation Michigan's doing seems counterproductive, even when they're not getting caught trying to substitute when the other team isn't. So, you know, Michigan made a lot of mistakes on offense. That's true. But they had enough points to win. They had enough yards to win. And then the defense, I feel, just wasn't prepared for tempo, which was pretty tough in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the game was lost more on defense than on offense. And one of the things we mentioned last week was that MSU has a low success rate, but a high explosiveness, high big play rate. And that seemed to go on again. I guess my question is, in the first half, they tempoed us on a play. We got burned on I think one of the touchdowns in the first half was a play where we were tempoed. And how come then in the second half this continued to go on? I mean, you'd think after you got burned by it once in the first half, you'd be very careful about your substitutions.
So the first two happened pretty close to each other. Okay. And then I figured we were done with it. And then it came back in the last drive. Remember, like, there's a... I forget what play came right after, but they were bringing in Whitley, of all people. And so Whitley is, like, running in, and he actually makes the play. I mean, it's Michigan gets a substitution violation because we still had guys on the field. But Whitley actually makes the play. This 400-pound dude is running in from the sidelines, jumps into the pile, and actually gets Walker down. But, like, why at this point? Why at that moment are you like, we need to get Whitley in there? That makes no sense to me. You've got your guys on the field.
Yeah, you know, I think, and I said this week, look, you get a Michigan State coaching staff credit for exploiting a vulnerability, and you give them the edge on the Michigan coaching staff in that regard. They picked out a vulnerability that we'd seen in other games. Mm-hmm. Not to the degree that we saw it against Michigan State, but I mean, the most visible one was against Nebraska, where Nebraska, they score a touchdown for that very reason. Michigan running guys in, they aren't set, boom, touchdown. Michigan State saw that, and they are going at it all game long, right? You know, that's good scouting, that's good coaching. That, you know, that zone play where they wrapped their tackle, Northwestern was doing that last week. They scored a couple of times. Michigan State scored a couple of times on that play. They give them credit. I give them credit. At the same time, Michigan left a lot of opportunities on the football field where you're like, man, if they just clean up some of that, they still win this game despite if you take away one of those fail points, coaches with the substitution errors, drop passes, or misplays, especially in the red zone. Any one thing. Or how about this? Let's focus on this for a second, guys. I did not anticipate Michigan, not having the edge in the front seven.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
did not anticipate that.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by the state offensive line in particular. And now some of this is Kenneth Walker, who has really good vision and is a very patient runner, and he helps that offensive line. But some of it is the offensive line for Michigan State was pretty good. Some of it was that our run fits were crazy. I mean, on the first touchdown of the game, I don't know where Brad Hawkins is going, for example. I mean, I think he's supposed to come into the gap where Walker actually went. Instead, he went to the other side of the field and
Walker. So that one was actually back on the tackles again. And that one is again a second or third string tackle. Welshoff on that play
got too far up the field.
Yeah, so he gets past his guy. Yeah. And he beat his guy. So if he just stays put, if he gets into the backfield, now he's got them corralled. Then he's got Hinton coming through. Hinton actually gets his arms on the guy, and someone jumps on Hinton's back and he falls off, but it's over. The problem is Welshoff dives. He uses up his advantage to try to get a diving tackle and make a big play. And on Walker, you got to be a little more careful than that. That guy is dynamite, right? So he goes down, and now we're out of gaps. And Hutchinson now has to be on both sides of his gap, and there's a huge space he's got to fill inside. He does so, and then all you've got is a receiver who's getting or a cornerback who's getting held by the receiver on the outside. And Hawkins is supposed to be your last man. He's supposed to be like the guy to save you. But Hawkins came down when it looked like it was just going to be a big pile, and he's on the wrong side of that whole thing, which you're not supposed to do, right? The safety's not supposed to just come and hover on the wrong side when there's a big gap open up on the other side. Like, you have to be the safety valve. So, I mean, that was just a bad play. He got minused in my charting for it. Moten did the same thing later. It was, one more thing. But each one of those guys made that mistake once.
Yeah, you know, you look at the early going for Kenneth Walker and give him credit. He deserves all the Heisman conversation. He's legit. He manufactured plays in the early going where he was responsible for making something out of nothing. Later in the game, hell, anyone could have run through some of the holes that he was getting later in the game. Michigan's backs, meanwhile, didn't have that sort of clear space. We weren't able to really get plays going. And then, so that too was surprising to me. I mean, you wouldn't think that Michigan had the rushing lead, you know, heading into the fourth quarter. It was, you know, just stick to it, if you will, but it wasn't because they busted a play here or busted a play there. I thought you give Michigan State's front a slight edge in that battle. They didn't dominate Michigan's front, but they slowed that run game down a lot and certainly kept it from being something they can lean on, especially in the red zone.
Well, I guess you got to look at pass protection because they didn't get anywhere near McNamara in this game.
Yeah, pass pro was good. Was really good.
Yeah, so like so we're talking about the front seven, and Michigan was getting to Peyton Thorne repeatedly, two sack strips, one of which gets taken off the board for insane reasons. And he's just under siege the whole time. So you got to give Ojabo and Hutchinson credit there. So got to look at that too. And I just, you know, Michigan State's coming down into the box and they've got free hitters because they're getting really aggressive after the run. And so Michigan takes advantage of that on a number of passes. And at some point, you can't beat your head against a wall if you don't have a quarterback to even up the numbers, right? So Michigan took a look at that and they went to more of a passing orientation. And I think given what Michigan State was doing on defense, I thought that the run game was relatively productive and they did.
So
okay.
I guess what I'm getting at is, man, there's a string of run plays. I mean, I just put 10 of them in a reel where it wasn't the safety coming down in the box making a play.
Yeah,
it's Michigan State's defensive line destroying a double team or blowing up his man.
And I'm sure 90% of those were Jacob Slade. Like that,
yeah, he's good.
That's the best tackle we faced.
The best
this
guy
year.
On the Michigan State team is not Kenneth Walker.
Well, and Jalen Hunt had himself. Hunt had himself a good day too.
Yeah, he did.
Or just not being able to get a hat on a linebacker or getting beat. I mean, Kruvaris Crouch is in the hole. You know, and or the Halliday guy, those guys are it just was not characteristic of how I'd seen Michigan State play up to this point. And certainly Michigan has been much, much better at getting plays started than they were in this game. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. Even in plays where it wasn't the safety coming out, it was just your battle across from you. They didn't necessarily win, but to their credit, like Brian just pointed out, they found some things through the air. There were 380 yards through the air that they got. Probably 580 yards available. I mean, Michigan State was lucky that they didn't get 500 yards hung on them in this game. And to me, if you're Michigan, you're coming out of this contest, and this is where I want to get with you guys. You're coming out with your contest feeling like Cade took a step. And if it's me, I'm coming out of this contest saying, man, I found a package for JJ that works. Well, in combo, you put him in for a few plays in a row. He got a shot play. I would use him more in the red zone. I'm curious what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how if you're not going to throw in the red zone and Michigan does not throw in the red zone very much, then it makes sense to have the more mobile guy play. And then he's able to flip up a kind of a jump ball for Andrew Anthony that's well placed, and Anthony goes and gets it. And we haven't really talked about him enough because not only does he have 155 yards in this game, but the way he got them, like, really screamed future star, right? So he has the first touchdown where he outruns the entire secondary. He has the leaping David Terrell / Braylon Edwards touchdown. He almost has a spectacular catch on the sideline where he just can't get his foot. His foot's an inch out. And then at the end of the first half, he's able to, like, smartly get out of bounds, save Michigan a timeout. So for a guy who had zero catches going into this game, he looks like all of a sudden like a star in the making. So
he would have had a third touchdown on the flea flicker.
Yeah, you that know? Was really close, too. I think I managed to compare him to literally every single number one wide receiver in the history of Michigan football, including Paul Goble. Like, I had to go back to the 20s in order to, like, keep on going with that. I don't know if
I
Harry
don't think
Kempke
Paul
played
Goble
outside
had
at all.
Their number, though. Did they have numbers in the 20s?
Oh, he was the first number one. That's our buddy.
He was?
Grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's the first number one. But I
oil just, his knee. He had metal hinges in his knee. He had to literally oil his knee so he wouldn't shoot.
That's why I have the blue flowers in the at Ohio Stadium. They gambled on what color the flowers would be on that game. They were so confident they were going to win. Going back to Anthony, I mean, that was a – you like – think about the great players that we've had at Michigan, right? Like the ones that have come through, there's always that like that hello moment, right? Like Denard Robinson in Western Michigan, that 13-yard run that Hart had in San Diego State, where like he gets it's 3 yards, and then all of a sudden the rest of it is him just like, you know, pushing people out of the way and churning, like those moments that announce who this player is going to be. And if Andrell Anthony is on that track, that 93-yard touchdown where he outruns a pretty good safety and then outruns the entire freaking team, is just like, maybe like I feel like we're off to the races.
Yeah, they found another guy for sure, and that to me was the defining characteristic for Cade McNamara. On time and on target, short and intermediate, giving guys the ball in positions where they could do something with it, whether it's Andrell. I mean, he hit Eric All a number of times down the middle of the field. He found things that he consistently that he hadn't been finding. And some of those passes he threw under duress. I just thought for what we had seen from him up to this point, to have him come out and play the way that he played, you got to win that game when he throws for 380 yards. One of the ways in which you do that moving forward, though, is I'm saying not just JJ running in the red zone, because I think him as a complimentary thrower in the red zone as well. Some of those fade balls, you had two fade balls at the end of the first half, for instance. You had the fade ball to Mikey St. Ristel down the stretch. I think, man, giving him a few opportunities, just like I said, give him a shot. He went in for a shot play and checked it down. He didn't force it. Put him in a few more red zone times. Not saying make him the red zone quarterback, but I think that is one of the ways in which you can improve your red zone efficiency. I think he's part of the answer.
Why not make him the red zone quarterback? I mean, we've been terrible in the red zone. I mean, so why? And you put JJ in there, all of a sudden, you know, you make it more difficult on the defense because you've got essentially an extra player on the field. And it's not like Cade has been killing it in the red zone, but I don't see any reason why not. Yeah, I mean, unless he's going to keep fumbling.
I don't think that we're not that clever with our zone read game. Even when we've tried to do clever things with it, I don't know if Gattis doesn't seem to have like the, you know, a lot of ideas like Scott Frost would have, right? He had some cool RPO ideas, and I wish we'd actually go back to some of the things that he used to do with the RPOs, which kind of fit our offense a lot better. We just are not a great zone read team. Like we can have to put it a little bit of in the offense, but that's nobody on the staff seems to have like a really good idea of like the 400 level zone read stuff, right? It's just not part of their package. And the other argument against that, I'm not saying I agree with this argument, is that Cade is balling out for you. I mean, you can't expect him to miss DeSainer still. I want to point out a stat here that we missed earlier. 351 of his yards were on passing downs or on clock downs. So he wasn't just doing that against, you know, it was not the run game who was just setting him up. He was doing that on passing downs.
So he's the reason they were in position to win that game. He had a great game. He was not balling out in the red zone. That's where I say yes, because there was to me, maybe the most frustrating red zone play was the one where he scrambled, because that one where they motioned AJ Henning into the backfield and they wall swing him out of there. They scored a touchdown on that earlier in the season, and it is open, and it's probably a touchdown in this game. You got Cornelius Johnson. He comes and he cuts the linebacker. You got Eric All one-on-one with the corner as a lead blocker, and it is wide open to the edge. And I cannot figure why he doesn't throw that. That is a red zone opportunity missed. And so you get in that area, execution becomes even more important. And having a guy who can not only run, but have a little more touch on some of those throws, I think is a huge, huge deal. That's why I say more JJ in the red zone.
I agree. And Seth may be correct that we're not much of a read option team, but it doesn't mean that, his scrambling ability, if nothing else in the red zone, gives you something, an additional weapon, an additional ability to put touchdowns on the board when they're in that position, as opposed to kicking the 7 field goals we kicked in the game. I think it was 7, right?
Well, listen, listen, we got to get to a break. I'm not one that's averse. I talk about officials, damn it. I talk about calls where Michigan gets robbed. I don't really give a damn. People say I'm crying about it. They took a touchdown off the board. They robbed Michigan of 4 points in this game, and it should be called out. And I'm going to call it out. I want you guys' opinion on it on the other side. We got to get to a break. We'll get to it. We'll return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket.
What opinion exists as far as that play? There is no opinion. There are no opinions left on that play. There's only fact.
Both EA and Steve Clark says, you know, it was the right call. It was the right call.
EA was ridiculous. I mean, that was the most incredible convoluted gibberish I ever heard in my life. I mean, Sam, you cross-examined him into oblivion on that. I mean, that was idiotic what he was saying. I mean, it was beyond the idiocy. And when you pressed him on it, he got more idiotic. So, I mean, the logic and the reasoning behind this.
Look, EA, that's my dude. That's my guy.
I'm not saying he's not a great guy, but that was nonsense. It was abject nonsense what he was saying. Steve Clark, I didn't hear. I like Steve. EA seems fine, but it was absurd what he was saying. At some point, he said something completely moronic, like, I actually wrote it down because I said this doesn't even qualify as genuine frontier gibberish.
good quote.
We disagree.
I know. I was happy to hear you. I mean, and I was glad you didn't let him, you know, let him get away with it. So, it was stunning.
I didn't hear it. The only thing I know about this is your description of it, Craig. It's the only
His point was he thinks that the knee was down. And my point was, well, show me where you can conclusively say the knee was down.
I don't care about the conclusiveness, though. The ball's out as soon as Ojabo starts hitting
him. Yeah, I mean, look at the film. The ball's coming out.
I agree.
You don't even need to go on to Indiana.
There are no opinions. There are no opinions, just facts. There is only one fact.
I agree that the ball was out. I agree that the ball was out. There are people out there who think that it wasn't out. EA's one of them. Steve Clark yesterday.
They're both wrong.
There are people who think that the vaccine's not effective, too. There are people who think everything.
Kyrie Irving thinks the world is flat. Okay,
but my point is, even if we stipulate for the record that I think it's out, you think it's in, that we disagree, it's inconclusive. You go with the call on the field. That's what I kept saying. Okay, we're disagreeing. Reasonable people, I suppose, can disagree on this. We're seeing the same play differently. No, you can't tell me that reasonable people, if you assume the officials, that they are all seeing it that way conclusively. There's no freaking way.
I have always said, and you guys can disagree with me on this maybe, but if you're watching the play, I don't think you should re-officiate necessarily. But like, if you're watching the play and it's pretty obvious, but not like 100% conclusive, but it's pretty obvious that like a guy stepped out of bounds or whatever, like if you're watching that play again on replay and you're like, yeah, I should have called it the other way, call it the other way. I don't think you need to have like, you know, sworn testimony from 8 witnesses and, you know, an affidavit by the quarterback that he stepped out. Like, I think that like you should try to get the play right. That's the number one thing I always care about. The right call in that situation is clearly that the ball was out and it was a touchdown. So like that's where I'm at. I don't care about like the, you know, I know that the standard is, and I know that they didn't come close to the standard. But I don't care about what the standard is because I don't like the standard. I think you should try to make the best call possible. The best call possible was clearly that it was a touchdown. The ball was out.
Either way, whether they go with the standard or they go and see it like we see it, it's a touchdown either way.
I agree. It's a touchdown.
Back on radio in about 20 seconds, guys.
Talking about it makes no sense to me. It's one out of a lot of calls that all went one way in this game.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the county, and MGO Blog Roundtable crew is back. If you were with us on the stream, you know where we all sit, where we all stand on the call. I guess I didn't get Brian Cook's opinion, but I'm assuming that Brian
because Brian is always the voice of reason, as opposed to me, who's like the voice of the jackal.
Well, Craig, so without hanging my guy Eric Adelson in verbal effigy, I would like your take, because we had some spirited debates over the last couple of days on these airwaves about that call in particular. I think all the calls went against Michigan in this game, all of them, but that one is the most egregious because they literally took points off the board. And so EA says he thinks it was a fumble. Steve Clark said yesterday.
He said he thought it was not a fumble.
Oh yeah, he thought it was not a fumble. That's right. Steve Clark yesterday said he thinks the inference you can draw was that it was a fumble, which that's not the standard. I think Michigan was robbed on that play. Doesn't mean that this is the reason they lost the game, but I definitely think the officials impacted the game in this one. What say you, Craig Ross?
I certainly agree that the officials impacted the game, and particularly so on this play. I mean, let's just look at what Perara said. Perara said, quote, "I would certainly expect that call to stand." And then Klatt said, "This is wrong. They just re-officiated the play." So, I mean, you had two guys in the booth who generally try and support ultimate outcomes. And in this instance, they both said, no, what happened was wrong. You can see on the replay that the ball is out from the first moment he's hit. And there's one view that makes it perfectly obvious that the ball's out when he's hit. But even if you think somehow the ball that's falling out of his hands and he's trying to clutch to his hips or his thighs is somehow in his possession, it's still not clear. And I think the exact word in the rules is incontrovertible. Mm-hmm. And so this is wrong from every single point of view. Consider this in the juxtaposition with Kenneth Walker's first touchdown, where he somehow loses, drops ball near the goal line. Now I don't know if that ball's over the goal line or not, but I think the call was right because on the views you had, you just can't tell. It's certainly lost the ball.
It's also the worst rule in all of sports that like you lose the ball. Yeah. If you drop the ball at the half inch line that goes to the other, like that's a terrible, terrible rule.
Well, regardless, my point is that, you know, it wasn't incontrovertible and so they let it stand and they should have. It would have been a travesty. I agree, Seth, if they would have said, oh yeah, he fumbled the ball. It's a touchback. You know, so they got that, you know, they got that right. And this play really isn't any different. And so I disagree that Michigan got no calls in this game. They got one call. The roughing the passer near the end of the game, I thought was incredibly light call.
No, that guy takes two steps after he throws the ball. I'm not going with it.
You're not
with you.
Buying that.
I do think that they got away with a call, and I wanted to bring this up on the radio too. I think Mike Morris, on that play we talked about earlier, actually, was the third time that they ran their guys on the field late. That Morris, on the video, really does seem to be choking Kenneth Walker for a while after the play. And Walker afterwards is like grabbing his throat. And I've watched that play a lot of times. I know a lot of people responded to me saying like, here's what it really could be or whatnot. But like, I saw a player grabbing his throat after the play and gasping for air. That's not right.
All right. So I don't want to belabor this too much. I just feel like, I mean, if you don't talk about it, man, where's the accountability for the freaking referees? I mean, everyone, I say this all the time, everyone in the game has some level of accountability. Coaches messed up with the substitutions. We're talking about it, right? There's public, visible accountability for that. Player messes up a play. He blows it or he gets beat. There's accountability for that. You lose your position. You lose your job. Officials, You're just supposed to sit there and take it. Oh, that just happens. That's just a part of a game. It's human error. Why is no one else involved in the game? Why did no one else involved in the game get deference for human error? No one else does. Why should they?
I was a referee in college, and it's hard. I still think about some of the calls that I made wrong. I think that there was
for like IM games.
Yeah, but it's still so what? It's still the same.
Calls in IM games haunt you to this day.
Yes, you know why? Because it was against our football team, and they're still mad at me for it. Still today, Pat Massey is like, that's the guy. That's the guy who called me out.
Wait a minute. Okay. Refereeing is hard. Since when did coaching become
hold on a second. Hold on a second. I'm forget the IM thing for a second. There was a difference in this game. I just got done charting all the defense last night, and, you know, when UFR posts later today, I'm not going to have my normal refs minuses and stuff in there. I'm not grading it. I'm leaving it out because I've never seen a game like this. I charted lots of games against lots of different teams because I used to always chart opponents versus each other, right? Like Michigan State, Indiana games and whatnot. And I've seen a lot of games where they just let things go. This thing was on another level. I don't think that there's any controversy. I don't think it's even worth talking about the touchdown because everyone knows what happened and everyone saw that. There's a lot of other calls where you can look at that again and be like, okay, that's 90% should not go from Michigan State, but it did. And then there's a lot of things that they just didn't call all game. And then they call one against Michigan on the other side. And it's just like, these guys are amateurs, right? These referees are not getting paid very much. And we have lots of money in the Big Ten. Tons of it. How hard would it be to take $2 million? $2 million is what it would cost to have like a full staff of professionals with medical benefits. During the week, they could explain what their calls were. And these guys, and we would have the best referees in the game because nobody pays their referees well. Even the NFL doesn't do a good job of paying their referees well. And then players would want to come play in the Big Ten because you know what competitive athletes hate the most? Bad calls, right? Like, it bothers them more than it bothers us. There's no reason at this point, with all the money that the Big Ten has, not to professionalize these guys because they're amateurs. Amateurs are not putting the time and effort into this game that they need to be for the quality that everyone else is putting in. Those players are putting in their entire lives to this point to be on that football field. Those coaches are under a humongous amount of pressure, and they're all being paid, and they're all using the time of their, you know, most of the time of their lives to deal with this game. And then we have amateur officials who only do this on the weekend. That's why you get this quality.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to say one thing about Seth's big point, and or a small point. In this game, on Walker's first touchdown run, Welchoff comes too far up the field. Hawkins has a bad run fit, in my opinion. Hinton is going to make the play, but he's tackled from behind. And then their wide receiver holds one of our players on the outside, and
which happens every play. Receivers and cornerbacks do that
every play. Yeah. And that's why I'm saying, okay, that's fine. This is football as it's played, and those things generally aren't called, and it's fine. Walker scores his touchdown, but later in the game they get a call on Andrell Anthony, a holding call, yeah, which actually happens after the receiver is out of bounds. And
it was actually the drive before that.
Yeah.
So it was the previous drive that they called that on Anthony.
And it's first of all, it's an incredibly light hold under any set of circumstances. And secondly, it's the same that's been going on in the game, the whole game, and might have cost Michigan a touchdown. Because it would have been first and goal on the 5 as opposed to first and goal on the 17, I think, is where they spotted it. So, yeah, this is quite frustrating in that respect. And we've talked about this before, that it makes sense to have professional officiating crews. And it makes sense for these officials to have a loss, to be paid enough so that losing these jobs means something. Mm-hmm. And I would say, hey, you get a crew, you pay them $1 million a crew for the season, and you give it to the lead crew guy, and he hires who he wants, and they are eagle-eyed and hawk-eyed every game as to what the quality is. And if they're not doing it, then get rid of them and start paying somebody else. Make it so they've got skin in the game, that they're calling a game that makes sense and is, you know, and is a well-officiated game. This game was a joke from an officiating perspective.
Yeah, public accountability too.
Yeah,
I think is a big deal. They should have to answer for these calls routinely, just like everyone else has to answer questions after a game. Coaches and players, they should have to do the same thing after every game. So let's put this baby to bed, right? And look ahead. Michigan has Indiana this week. You still got Penn State, Maryland, and then Ohio State. Michigan obviously needs some help. They need Michigan State, I believe, to lose a couple of times because they don't get any tiebreakers, right? I said the same thing about Baylor. They don't get any of the tiebreakers, right? Let's say, for the sake of argument, it's a three-way tie. Michigan State, Ohio State. Does Michigan win any of those tiebreakers, assuming that they beat the Buckeyes?
No.
I don't think they, yeah.
Are we,
yeah.
Wait. The last part of your sentence, you had something else in there that seemed a little implausible. Beating the Buckeyes, assume they beat the Buckeyes.
I hear you. Hey, look,
why are we even talking about this? Let's beat the Buckeyes. And then if we beat the Buckeyes, I don't care where we go. Because if we don't win the Big Ten, that means the Big Ten champion is going to the playoffs, which means we're going to the Rose Bowl. And I'm so happy. I do not care at all about the playoffs. If I'm going to the Rose Bowl, I would take the Rose Bowl over the playoffs anyway.
You know. Yeah, Vance told a story about it. He said, '95, it was very implausible for us to beat the Buckeyes. He said, we got beat by Michigan State. We're going in to play Ohio State. They got Orlando Pace and Terry Glenn and all these first-round picks. And no one is on earth expected us to be in that game. And we were able to beat them. So, again, if Michigan cleans things up, they can at least be in that game. And that, you know, that's saying something. So, but you got to get there. And I guess I want to kind of look ahead to, let's just do the next three games then, Seth. Let's just look ahead at Michigan the next three games and what you see from this team. What can they improve? What is in their purview to improve over these next three games, in your opinion, coming off of this loss to Michigan State? We'll start with you, Brian Cook.
I don't know, man. I kind of feel like it's I'm sorry. I'm having a bit of a migraine here.
I got you. Well, this is how you pick up. This is how you pick up a teammate, Craig Ross.
A couple things. One is, can Michigan beat Indiana? Yes. Indiana offense. I mean, they're playing McCulley. Is that his name? At quarterback, he's a good recruit, but he's a
basketball player right now.
Yeah.
I mean
their offensive line is a mess. I mean, I can't see Michigan not winning this game unless Michigan is just emotionally out of it. The same for Maryland. Can they beat Penn State at Penn State? Sure. So they could go in, they could have Ohio State coming in into Ann Arbor with a good crowd, hopefully, and a crowd motivated, and I can see Michigan winning this game. I mean, the Ohio State game. Ohio State's defense hasn't looked all that great. I could see it happening, you know. And then, and in terms of your original question about the Big Ten rules, you know, let's say it's a three-way tie for the title, and then let's say Ohio State loses to Oregon at home, beats Georgia and Alabama on the road. Let's just say, and Michigan State beats Western Kentucky, Youngstown State, and Bula Bula State in East Lansing. Who goes to the Big Ten championship game on that? You know the answer? It's Michigan State. It's Michigan State. And so this makes absolutely no sense. The Big Ten is once again insane.
I was going to say Illinois, because they beat Penn State, so therefore they are clearly the champions of the Big Ten.
Right. I mean, it would make as much sense. And this year, this comes to into a potential fruition, because if it is a three-way tie, which could happen, Michigan State goes because Ohio State had the temerity to play Oregon.
Greg, let me jump in. That's that they've changed the rules. The tiebreaker in the Big Ten does not include out of conference games. The tiebreaker that's going to determine this is the winning percentage of your non-division opponents. Basically, the way who you played.
Oh, okay, it has been changed then. Okay, so the
So
go all the Huskies.
Basically, because Northwestern, because Michigan and Michigan State both played Northwestern.
Yeah.
And Ohio State play what, Minnesota or whatever. Ohio State has a tiebreaker if there's a three-way tie.
Okay, because it's been published over and over that Michigan State has the tiebreaker win in a three-way tie.
There's no longer out of conference is no longer a part of the tiebreaker.
Okay.
College football playoff ranking is not in there.
Thank you. Thank you for
I was reading it yesterday.
Okay. Thank you.
All of these are assuming Ohio State has one loss and it's to Michigan, and I'm not going there. I'm not going there. If Michigan beats Ohio State, we had a good season, and I don't care where we go. There's no bad result. And if like someone else goes to the Big Ten playoff game and we beat Ohio State, fine. Absolutely fine. I'll take that season in a heartbeat.
I mean, I'll take the season. I'm not fine with it.
Why do we care? The Big Ten, they sent Penn State in 2016 to the Big Ten championship game. Does anyone think Penn State was one of the top two teams in the Big Ten East that year? Come on. The Big Ten championship game never meant anything to me. It's in Indianapolis. It's, you know, the Big Ten West team never has a chance in that game. It's just it's a joke to me. It's just another opportunity to highlight Ohio State, and I don't watch
this is my Ohio thing. Whatever. This is way ahead of the curve. Is why I'm focusing on the next three games. Yeah. But assuming for the sake of argument, just to play it out, long as they go to the playoff, I guess I could give a crap whether it includes the Big Ten championship game. Just if you beat Ohio State, you should be a playoff team. Period. That's where I am at this point. So whether that includes the Big Ten championship game would be inconsequential to me. Just be a playoff team if you beat Ohio State. Now, that's a big if, a lot to do before that, a lot to see before that, but how this team responds. And to me, I mean, I want to see them bring the sledgehammer down in this contest, because now I'm feeling like this team can put a lot of – they should be able to light up the scoreboard. If Cade McNamara can play like that, you get back to – you know, blocking in the run game like they're accustomed to. The defense has a substitution pattern that can't be exploited, meaning just don't sub when they aren't subbing. I think that they should be able to pile drive this team. I'm hoping that that's what they do coming out on Saturday.
Yeah, Indiana's pretty broken. They're certainly not the team we thought they were going to be, but like they're missing a lot of their key pieces, especially like everyone started at the beginning of the season, like if they got Michael Penix, they're good. And if he gets hurt again, they're done. He came back and he was broken, and then they're done. I mean, I don't want to put any opponent aside, but like, you know, Michigan Stadium at night, it's going to be pretty cool in there.
All right, so what do you guys? You guys watched the Big Ten. We got a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
You guys remember Michigan lost obviously to Michigan State in 1999. Do you know who and where they played? Michigan State played after that. Michigan State played the game after they beat Michigan.
Purdue.
They played at Purdue, and they lost. Boiler up, baby.
That was a Drew Brees team, by the way. That's maybe a little bit different. That was a Drew Brees team. Remember that?
it was, but man, come on, Boilers, do us. Yeah, Michigan
and we lost our game after that too. Remember, we played Illinois and had that silly game. Oh God, how did I remind myself of the 2000 Illinois game?
That was the game where Michigan gave away the intentional touchdown.
Yes, which was a smart play at the time.
Lloyd about, and he always denied it, but I think that, in fact, they gave up the intentional touchdown at the end of the game, and it almost got the win out of it,
irony is, if Michigan wins against Illinois that year, are they playing for the national championship in 99? I mean, man, that's the team that went on to beat Bama, in the Orange Bowl. So, but that's why I'm talking about how this team comes out against Indiana. They had no business losing to that Illinois team. You know, you get in that game where they got a lead in that contest.
Big lead.
Comes all the way back. They hiked the ball over Tom Brady's head when he's trying to
orchestrate the comeback.
Why are we remembering 1999 Illinois? No. Erase this from your memory.
I was drawing a parallel for Michigan State. They beat Michigan.
Yep.
And then the very next week, they played at Purdue, and they lost. Let's let history repeat itself. I'm trying to speak it into existence, man. George Karlaftis, you left Michigan hanging at the altar. This is how you can pay him back. This is how George Karlaftis can come through for Michigan.
I mean, that's we saw Michigan State secondary. I think their corner is a little bit iffy, and I think David Bell's going to have a nice game against those dudes. So I can see it. Boiler up.
I'm right there with you, man. All right, look, basketball exhibition play starting another week in hockey. Any comments on those before we get out of here, guys?
Well, on hockey, Michigan got goaltendered to some extent this weekend. And the Thursday night game, they won 3-0 and should have won 8-0. But on Friday night, Wisconsin got ahead and then was Michigan State Redux. Once they got a 1-0 lead, they turtled and played defense, and Michigan could never quite come back out of it. But this is a good hockey team that's making key mistakes. I mean, they just need to be a little more solid and as things go along, because the mistakes they made in this game were absurd, in my opinion. Bordalo made a really silly mistake in front of the net. Hughes made a terrible mistake at the blue line, letting a guy walk in on Portillo. But they should be very good. Basketball, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, what do we know about basketball at this point? Nothing. And every basketball team is different. It isn't individual talent as much as it is the synergy of the team. And so what that synergy is going to look like, we'll have to see.
I know those Wayne State tickets are really hard to get your hands on. I've tried.
Is that right?
Wow.
I mean, is that game on television at all?
It's a small gym, so.
Isn't Warrior Sports TV the
Warriors?
Yeah, Warriors, something like that. The Wayne State TV broadcast is carrying it. It should be on Fox Sports or Valley Sports Detroit.
Okay.
It should be on, but it's not. So, but that'll do it for us today. We'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a team that has, come out and did what they were supposed to do against Indiana.